will take a large swath of Southeast Alaska's coastline out from under the ESA's burdensome and litigious regulatory regime.
Governor Parnell argues for taking the population of sea lions off the endangered species list. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 2nd of September. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, walrus come to shore in northwest Alaska after the sea ice disappears.
About 2 or 3 days ago, a few animals started to hit the beach, and it's kind of going on in full force right now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by North Rim Bank, helping you get from where you are to where you want to be. Achieve more. North Rim Bank for Business. Information at northrim.com. Member FDIC.
Alaska Attorney General Dan Sullivan says his office is reviewing police reports compiled in a child sex abuse investigation involving former VCO chief Bill Allen. The federal government has said it won't pursue charges in the case. Allen was the government's star witness in the corruption trial of the late Senator Ted Stevens. The charges were later thrown out because of prosecutorial misconduct. Allen pleaded guilty to bribing state lawmakers and is serving 3 years in a federal prison. Anchorage police conducted 2 investigations into whether Allen had sex with an underage girl in the 1990s. Governor Sean Parnell today announced the state has asked the federal government to remove Endangered Species Act protections for the eastern population of Stellar sea lions. The animals are currently listed as a threatened species, APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The eastern sea lion population has recovered, and the threats facing them have been addressed to the point that they no longer need Endangered Species Act protection.
In announcing the petition to the federal government, which was joined by the states of Washington and Oregon, Governor Parnell said taking the Stellar sea lion off the list would remove what he sees as a roadblock to development in Southeast Alaska.
If our petition is successful, we'll take a large swath of Southeast Alaska's coastline out from under the ESA's burdensome and litigious regulatory regime.
The eastern population lives roughly east of Prince William Sound and along the Pacific coast south to California. It's increased by an average of about 3% a year since the 1970s and has been on the threatened species list since 1990. Lowell Fritz of the Alaska Science Center of the National Marine Fisheries Service says this particular population of sea lions was already the subject of a recovery plan developed by the agency in March of 2008.
This was likely to be a candidate for delisting because it had shown fairly strong, unimpeded increase over 30 years, 3 generations of sea lions. So it didn't seem like it was threatened with extinction any longer.
Parnell has also asked that NMFS not increase protection for the western population of Stellar sea lions, which carries an endangered listing. NMFS has determined that the status of the western population is affected by commercial fishing, and it has raised the possibility of curtailing fishing activities in the western Aleutians. Fritz says the western population is very different and has had different dynamics over the last 30 years.
I don't think you can, and we haven't made the claim that just because the east has done well that that means much of anything with regard to the what should or shouldn't be done in the west.
Parnell has brought action against the federal government on many fronts since he took office, from health care to polar bears. But he says this action is the first offensive step the state has made, saying all the others were in defense of Alaska's state policies. His opponent in the November general election, Ethan Berkowitz, says Parnell is using disagreements with the federal government as a distraction.
It's easier to hurl accusations at the federal government than to take responsibilities for his own failings.
The federal government will review the Alaska, Washington, and Oregon petitions for delisting. That review will be open for public comment, and NMFS has 90 days to respond. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
For only the third time in human memory, walruses have started to congregate in large numbers on the Alaska's northwest coast. Earlier this week, the animals began hauling out on shore after the sea ice they depend on for foraging disappeared, APRN's Ane Fite reports.
Biologists had been watching the Chukchi sea ice retreat all summer, and as it dwindled, they were expecting to see walruses swim to shore. Earlier this week, overflights confirmed the phenomenon.
And it's kind of going on in full force right now.
Chad Jay is a research ecologist for the United States Geological Survey in Anchorage. In 2007 and 2009, retreating sea ice forced walrus into the same predicament. Jay says an exact count is hard to get, but several thousand animals are now hauled out on shore.
The sea ice over the Chukchi Sea shelf has all disappeared now. Even the very small remnant ice that walruses can use to stay offshore, that has disappeared too. And so they're basically looking for a place to haul out now.
Jay is flying to Point Lay next week to deploy radio tags on some of the walruses. Three more biologists are already on their way to Icy Cape, where they'll also deploy tags. Jay says they're trying to figure out how stressful it is for the animals to have to abandon their normal feeding areas out at sea.
We suspect that they may have a little bit longer foraging trips when they're on shore. They may have to work a little harder to get their food. A lot of these animals, too, are adult females with young, so they'll have those in tow when they're kind of the central place foraging from shore. Whereas when they're on the sea ice, a lot of times they don't have a long ways to go to get to their preferred foraging areas. So it's a little easier for them.
Last fall, 130 young walruses were found dead on a beach in northwest Alaska. Necropsies discovered the animals had likely been trampled to death, which can be a problem at large haulouts. Biologists expect trampling events to become more common as disappearing sea ice forces the animals to spend more time in large groups on land. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Fite.
There's another natural gas delivery option for Fairbanks. A local energy company has begun an open season to gauge market interest in a 10-inch diameter pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Fox, with smaller feeder lines to industrial consumers. Energia Acura principal partner Alex Gato says the $500 million pipeline is designed specifically to meet local demand.
Primarily, the thing that makes this thing work, in our opinion, is it's fit-for-purpose application to deliver natural gas to wanting interior load centers in the most cost-effective method.
Gato says the project is gauged to accommodate existing customers like Golden Valley Electric and the oil refineries in North Pole. He says the company will pursue gas supply agreements with North Slope producers or the state for a share of its royalty gas. The plan also calls for trading the state an equity share in the pipeline in exchange for right-of-way easements. Gato says the project pencils out better than larger bore pipelines that depend on export and hinge on market prices outside Alaska. He says the high cost of energy in Fairbanks makes the unusual project work.
The interior pays 30% to 40% more for its energy than what people in the common markets pay. And it's that avoided cost that lends itself to looking at relatively unconventional formats. This one is unconventional. It's a long pipe, small bore. You won't find that many other systems in the world that look like this, with the exception of a few in the third world.
Gato says the pipeline would be 40% debt financed as currently envisioned, but stresses things are in the preliminary stages. Energy Acura has been involved in several Fairbanks area projects. The company runs pipelines that feed the North Pole refineries and has installed control systems for Golden Valley. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan tightens the belt.
The expenditures exceed the revenues.
Stay ahead. That's with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
A judge today dismissed subsistence fishing citations against State Senator Albert Kukesh. All but one charge against three co-defendants were also dismissed. The four were cited for catching more sockeye salmon than their subsistence permits allowed. They were contacted by state troopers July 12, 2009, while beach seining at a bay near Angoon on southeast Alaska's Admiralty Island. Kukesh and the other defendants, all Angoon residents, challenged the state's right to manage subsistence on the island, which is mostly federal land. They lost that round, but they also argued that the state failed to follow its own rules for setting harvest limits. Kukesh says those limits were too low.
We challenged what we thought was unfair bag limits on the subsistence use of fishery in Angoon, which said that you can only get 15 fish per family per year, and a couple miles away you had seine boats, commercial seine boats, getting thousands of fish a day.
The charges were dismissed by Sitka Superior Court Judge David George, who presided because Angoon's magistrate is Kukesh's daughter. The others cited were Rocky Estrada Sr., Stanley Johnson, and Scott Hunter. Tony Strong represented the four fishermen.
The 15-fish limit was not promulgated to all the strictures of the Administrative Procedures Act. And that failure to follow the Administrative Procedures Act means that the regulation is not valid and the defendants cannot be prosecuted or that failure to follow the 15-fish limit.
Strong says Hunter still faces a charge alleging he did not get a subsistence permit before he went fishing. District Attorney Doug Gardner could not be reached for immediate comment. Kukesh says he hopes the ruling leads to other challenges of subsistence fishing limits. Yesterday, the First Alaskans Institute held a press conference to describe progress in its fight against racism. Since launching the project in July, they've formed a working group of a dozen or so people, including DJs of the Bob and Mark Morning Show on Anchorage radio station KWHL or K-Whale. The two are in the group after hearing feedback on a skit they aired in May. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes has more.
The DJs, in a parody of the federal program Cash for Clunkers, joked about Cash for Clinkets, a Southeast Alaska tribe. The two have since apologized and committed themselves to change. Listener Roisin Rowan Helene says she heard the joke and thought hard about how she wanted to respond. She remembers an incident at Anchorage station KBFX when DJs Woody and Wilcox were put on administrative leave.
I don't want this to be kind of another hate fest. I really wasn't interested in having a hate fest and being like, you guys are evil. Because I felt like that with the Woody and Wilcox situation, what happened is that they got taken off the air and there was a huge backlash against the Native people.
Rowan Helene met with Liz Medicine Crow, director of the Policy Center at the First Alaskans Institute, who contacted the station. Medicine Crow uses words like wisdom, kindness, understanding, long-term, and incremental to describe how First Alaskans Institute is approaching the issue of racism. Still, DJ Bob Lester says he's written thousands of comedy bits and never intended to hurt anyone's feelings, and it was painful to hear how people felt after hearing this one. He says now he always thinks about whether he's making fun of someone for who they are rather than what they've done.
And so now you talk about what is different. When I write these bits, I'm so conscious of, could this hurt? And I don't care if it's Native, Black, white, fat, skinny, gay, straight. I really try now to make sure that if it's funny, it's not going to be interpreted as hurtful in any way.
DJ Mark Colavecchio says the events have been a valuable learning experience because sometimes a person doesn't know where he lacks knowledge.
Nobody ever tells you that. You don't know you were ignorant. So when somebody, and I'm humble enough, believe it or not, to accept that I can be ignorant. I don't know know-it-all. Who am I? I'm just a guy. And I was ignorant. And now I know better. I learned. I feel enriched.
The working group has put together a long list of activities for K-Whale staff and anyone else interested in pursuing cultural learning and healing. Medicine Crow says the 40-year anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and Native Heritage Month coming up in November will feature lectures and much more.
We're working with the committee, have been in contact with the committee to try to find opportunities to bring these guys into those activities somehow, to be able to kind of share all the different things that are happening. Also with Healing Racism, they're bringing a guest speaker up in September by the name of Tim Wise. These guys will be going to his presentations. They'll be involved with the activity around all of that. So there's a lot of exciting things coming up.
Medicine Crow is also encouraging journalists to write more stories on the positive actions and contributions of Alaska Natives. I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan presented a grim picture to the City Assembly this week. Sullivan says the estimated 2011 costs of current services in the city are $448 million. That figure presents a gap of somewhere between $18 million and $18.5 million in city revenues and city expenses next year. And those numbers are dependent on a possible hike in city property taxes. Mayor Dan Sullivan.
For example, if we raised property taxes by 3%, we'd still be about $18.5 million in the hole. If we didn't raise property taxes at all and kept them the same level, we'd be over $20 million in deficit. And if we taxed to the tax cap, we'd still be over $8.5 million in deficit. So under different scenarios, there's still a significant gap in the budget, even if we taxed up to the tax cap, which I'm not inclined to do.
City budget preparations are underway now, although the proposed budget will not be presented to the Assembly until October 1st. Sullivan says his administration is in the middle of a two-year plan to return the city to fiscal stability. The 2011 budget will require some difficult choices regarding which services to provide at and at what level. Sullivan says he's not opposed to a city sales tax as a means of increasing revenues.
Well, it takes a 60% vote of the people, and that's been on the ballot four times before and has never gotten close to 60%. But maybe the timing is better now. Maybe people are realizing that having a diversified revenue stream for the city makes sense. I think it does. So it takes, the assembly to put it on the ballot in the first place, and then it takes the 60% vote. So it's not an easy thing to accomplish, but I certainly think it probably makes sense. You would then capture revenues from your commuters, your seasonal workers, your visitors, all of whom use city services, but really don't pay for the pleasure. So I think it's probably a good way to balance out your revenue stream.
Sullivan says factors complicating the 2011 budget are pay raises mandated by city labor contracts and increases to the cost of employee health insurance. The mayor says he's hearing from Anchorage residents about financial problems caused by the economic slowdown of the past couple of years. Community members recently were asked to weigh in on potential revenue shortfalls and tax scenarios during the city's community budget dialogues. A final report detailing results of those sessions is expected next month.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
Ocean Beauty Seafoods will resume full operations in Petersburg next year. That's according to company officials who point to early indications of a strong pink salmon return. Just the opposite was the case this year. Ocean Beauty shuttered its Petersburg plant for the most part this summer in anticipation of low pink returns. The company continued to purchase fish from the area, but it only processed them at its Excursion Inlet plant near Juneau. Ocean Beauty Vice President for Marketing and Communications locations, Tom Sunderland.
We plan on processing in Petersburg full bore. Every indication is that there will be a very good pink salmon run, and based on that, we expect to, you know, business as usual, back to normal. I mean, 2010 was the aberration. We expect 2011 will be back to usual and back to buying as many fish as we can.
When Ocean Beauty announced it would be closed this summer, company officials emphasized it would be only for 1 year. However, that didn't stop some speculation in town that it might be longer. Municipal officials and business owners worried about the decline of raw fish tax income to the city, as well as the loss of seasonal businesses from transient fishing vessels, cannery workers, and the plant itself. The news that Ocean Beauty is planning to buy fish again in Petersburg next summer comes as a relief to Mayor Al Dwyer. Dwyer and the city council have been discussing ways to help improve the local fishing industry.
We've got a committee to come up with ways of making things attractive to the commercial fishing industry and the processors. And to hear that one of our big processors is coming back is just, I'm elated.
Petersburg's two other major processing plants are owned by Icicle Seafoods and Trident Seafoods, both of which operated this year. Ocean Beauty has run its plant in Petersburg since 1985. Historically, this was the first summer in at least 20 years that Icicle had the only major canning operation in town. Thanks to a change in eating trends and demand for safe wild seafood after the Gulf Coast oil spill, Norton Sound fishermen on the west coast of Alaska have crossed the $1 million mark in revenue this year, the first time since 1983. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
The 2010 chum salmon harvest was the best since 1986, with silver salmon returns above average. Fish and Game Area Manager Jim Menard says revenue for Norton Sound commercial salmon fishermen will likely reach $1.1 or $1.2 million.
And that'll be an all-time record for the commercial salmon fishery, the ex-vessel value, without adjusting for inflation.
Menard says the average permit holder will get close to $10,000, which sets another record for Norton Sound fishermen. The records in revenue stem from high prices per pound for both chum and silver salmon. Prices doubled since last year. Chum salmon prices jumped from 30 cents a pound to 65 cents a pound paid at the dock, and the price for silvers also doubled since last year. The jump in price is partly thanks to a change in eating trends. Wild salmon prices dipped when farm salmon hit the markets. With more of the public looking for wild organic food, farm salmon has taken a back seat, and commercial fishermen in the area are reaping the benefits. The benefits keep rolling in. The price for silvers at the beginning of the season started off at $1.20 a pound. The current price is $1.80.
So the late run here, it's jumped up over $1 a pound more than last year.
Norton Sound Seafood Products is a subsidiary of the Regional Community Development Quota Group, the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation. They have a fish plant in Unalakleet, and the manager, Mitty Johnson, says that jump in price late in the season is partly due to demand in safe, wild seafood after the Gulf Coast oil spill. The Norton Sound Seafood Products fish plant in Unalakleet buys and processes salmon from fishermen out of Unalakleet, Shaktulik, Koyuk, Elam, and Gullivan. Plant manager Mitty Johnson.
Wouldn't be possible to have successful seasons without having the cooperation of the fishermen themselves and all the people that work for us, from, you know, our top 16-year-old processor to all the tender guys and the guys on the dock that are just dedicated to making this thing go.
Johnson says most Norton Sound salmon is sent fresh to Anchorage and hits the markets thanks to a partnership with Copper River Seafoods, and soon the salmon will be available at the upcoming restaurant, the Norton Sound Seafood House, inside the Ted Stevens International Airport in Anchorage. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kanin.
This week, the National Marine Fisheries Service published new rules meant to reduce salmon bycatch. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
The National Marine Fisheries Service has finalized Amendment 91, which sets new rules for the Bering Sea's pollock fishing fleet in an attempt to reduce Chinook salmon bycatch. The comprehensive plan is a product of a joint effort from NIMS and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. While Amendment 91 contains some enforcement measures, it also hinges upon incentive plans proposed by the Pollock fleet itself. The Incentive Plan Agreements, or IPAs, help place some responsibility on the industry for monitoring enforcement rather than making NIMS the first and last authority when it comes to reducing the accidental catch of salmon. Stephanie Madsen, the executive director of the At Sea Processors Association, says the IPAs take a carrot and stick approach. Here's what one might look like.
These incentive plans have to be at the vessel level, you know, so it can't be at the co-op level or at the sector level. They have to be actually incentives that, in essence, change behavior on the water. So you do that by preventing that vessel with bad behavior to fish in areas of good pollock catch or high roe recovery. If there's salmon bycatch in that those areas and they can't perform at a decent level, then they're not allowed to fish there anymore. Those kinds of things.
The NIMS program also sets a hard cap of 60,000 on Chinook salmon bycatch. If more salmon than that are accidentally caught, the pollock fishery will be closed. It also puts in place a soft cap of just under 48,000. That's a goal number for NIMS and pollock trawlers to keep in mind, and if fishing vessels exceed that limit regularly, harsher rules could be implemented. The last major component of the plan involves increased observer coverage. Observers will be required to count each Chinook salmon caught by pollock fishing vessels. While gear like salmon excluders have helped reduce bycatch in recent years, a peak in bycatch a few years back prompted the North Pacific Council to consider improving its management plans, says Gretchen Harrington, a NOAA Fisheries Plan Coordinator.
We had our highest bycatch year in 2007. After that year, that's when the council started developing this program, and that was the impetus for them to set, one, a maximum limit on bycatch. So even in years when Chinook ocean abundance is high, bycatch is capped.
Incentive plans are being considered until October 1st, and the program will go into effect during the 2011 pollock A season. In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka, Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Lorelei Kanine in Nome, and Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. The Federal Housing Administration's network of FHA-approved housing counseling agencies offers free expert advice to homeowners whose mortgages are at risk, underwater, or in need of refinancing. Visit hud.gov/Alaska for a counselor near you. This message sponsored by HUD.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.